But we have a superstar of AFL footy on the line, a man who is a three-time premiership captain, a two-time Norm Smith medalist, and up until recently, a one-time, well, changer of clubs from the club he did so much for into a club that is going to do a lot of good things in the future and has a very good future ahead of it. I speak, of course, of the Brisbane Lions and their star recruit in Luke Hodge. Hello, Hodgie.
G'day, mate. What's going on?
Well, not as much as going on with you, and from all reports up north, you're as tan as you've ever been and running around like a 21-year-old again.
I wouldn't say that. The weather has been pretty nice. I was actually shattered you cut the tennis there. It sound like an interesting game.
It's a very interesting game, and it is still advantage Kerber on serve, so she's going to take it to 5-5 if she wins the next point. We'll bring you the latest, Hodgie, as always, as it comes to hand on SEN. But Hodgie, talk us through what's been going on at the Brisbane Lions. We haven't heard from you a lot after you sort of made the decision to not retire and go up to Brisbane. Now that you've been there for a couple of months, what's your take on the place?
Oh, mate, that was deliberate. It was, I guess, my job when I got up here was, I guess, just knuckle down and understand where Brisbane are at, understand, obviously, the strengths and weaknesses of my new teammates, and obviously where I can try and help them, and I guess give a bit of knowledge for what I've learned over my career, pass it on to them so we can try and fast-track them. So, look, it's been about 3 months now, and we're loving it. The family's been up for a bit over a month now.
Yep.
As you said, the weather's been quite nice as well, so it helps the kids settle down. The kids have started school this week as well, which has kept them pretty busy. But, we've really enjoyed our time up here.
Speaking of superstar and Brisbane Lions recruit Luke Hodge on SEN's Time On, Angelique Kerber, by the way, did hold. So it is 5-5 in the third set against Simona Halep. Hodgie, the number two. Now, I don't know this, but I can only put two and two together and assume that the choice of number two has something to do with your very close mate in Jared Ruffhead.
When I realised that when I did get traded to Brisbane, that number 15 might be a bit of a stretch to get, considering Zorks just got all Australian and has won the last three BNFs. So I sort of looked through the numbers and they sort of said, what numbers would you like? And obviously two was sitting there. And obviously I've done a fair bit of work with Ruff over the last few years with his captaincy and got quite close with him. So I thought it was a pretty clear decision what I wanted, and they were pretty happy to give it to me. So
did you call him Hodgie and tell him that you were going to do it or that you'd had done it?
No, I gave him the heads up that we might be we're both wearing number twos, and he sort of was keen for a jumper swap at some stage throughout the season when we play against each other. So that should be good.
Oh, well, look out, Brisbane and Hawks fans, for a jumper swap for the two number twos when they do play. Hodgie, you've seen a lot of very good young stars come through the game in number one draft picks and first round draft picks. Been in the game a long time now. Cam Rayner, there's a lot of hype about this young man. What have you made of him so far?
Yeah, I think there's always going to be a bit of pressure on the number one draft pick coming in, especially with Brisbane getting so many picks over the last few years. Cam's been excellent for what he's done, but so have all the other recruits we've got. We've got six 18-year-olds coming to the side, so we had a little bit of a scratch match last night. Cam did his thing. The best part about what he does is, yes, he can get the ball, but he put so much forward pressure on last night. But then we've got five other guys who have also been very impressive in their first 3 months of AFL pre-season. So you look at that and the rest of the list, I think we've got about 30-odd guys under 23. So it's an emerging list. It is a young list, but it's something that you see a lot of potential, and they're working really hard. The pre-season so far has been very solid, but everything that the coaches have tried to teach them, they've taken on board. And from what I've heard from other players, that the intensity and the attitude around the training track and the standards have lifted from last year at this stage. So it's a great result.
Hodgie, you said in your first or second answer tonight, you used the term where they're at as far as the Lions. Where do you think they're at? Because, you know, they've been towards the bottom for a few years now, but there are countless examples in AFL footy about young emerging sides with a few young stars that can, in 1 or 2 years, make a significant jump.
Yeah, I think so. I guess what helps teams develop faster and, I guess, jump the ladder is having those guys between 22 and 28 on your list, those next emerging leaders who are really going to push the standards to follow the leaders in your footy club. And I guess Brisbane went through a stage of 4 or 5 years where they lost the majority of those 22 to 28-year-olds to either go home or go to other clubs, which it hurts the development with all these new guys coming through. So I guess the stage that they're at is, as I sort of said before, they've got so many young guys there, but their attitude's spot on. You've got Beams, whose captaincy is outstanding. The standards that he's trying to set, followed by the other leaders, has been really good. But I guess the appealing thing is the stability off-field is also making the players feel more stable around the footy club. You look at Swanee's re-signed, what he's done, also what Nobes and Fakes have done over the last 12 to 18 months. The structure's there, and you can feel it around the footy club. There's a great vibe, which I think you've seen with the young guys. Cam was there for 2 months and re-signed for another 2 years.
Yeah.
Hugh McCluggage has re-signed. So I guess the most important part, the football side is going to come, whether it's 12 months, 18 months, 2 years, that will come. But I guess the best part of it is the stability. And I guess the guys want to stay around the club, which is the most important thing.
How has it been seeing one of your dear old friends in Chris Fagan in a very different light as a coach and not a mentor or as a head of footy?
I don't think I've seen him in a different light. It's the same Fags who they appointed when he left the Hawthorn Footy Club 18 months ago. I guess what has seen over his 20 years in AFL between Melbourne and Hawthorn is, I guess you need to be a manager and a people's person. And I guess that's the strength that he's had that they went after, and he hasn't changed. Yes, he speaks up and he can't get angry in meetings, as all coaches do, but the best part and what the players have loved about him is his one-on-one relationships. He's very honest with him, which holds him in good stead with him, but also he's there to support them. If they make a mistake, he doesn't rip them. He makes sure that they learn from the mistake rather than just tearing shreds off them.
And has he spoken to you about what he's learned in the first year or so of being a new coach?
I haven't got into that much detail. It's more about what we can do to help develop the younger guys is what we've really spoken about. But I guess it's when you can become a head coach, I've heard say a couple times that you don't stop thinking about football. When you're a footy manager, yes, you go all the footy structure stuff and you're worried about things off field. But when you're a head coach, you're always thinking about what you can do to make the team better, make the players better, make the coaches better. So you do something. Walking. He doesn't live far from my house, and you see him out walking most mornings and nights. And he's got that look on his mind that he's consistently thinking about how he can get better and the group get better.
Hodgie, we just had a text here from John in Brisbane on 0433 98 11 16. Sam, I've seen Hodgie at Yeronga Pool swimming. Surprised me how good a swimmer he is, and he's looking ripped. John in Brisbane. Now, I notice, Hodgie, as I look at the map, that Light and Easy, their head office, is actually based in Queensland. Are we still going with Light and Easy?
We still are, mate. As I said, it's nothing's changed as far as that. It's still a meal that I have occasionally. I have copped a bit of flack about it, but as I said, it's worked for me and it's worked for a lot of people, and I'll continue to do it even though people do like to mention it a few times. But yeah, I guess we've had to do a bit of cross training. I'm not going to do every session, even though I've done majority of them. You still got to do some cross trainings with boxing, swimming,
yep.
A little bit of bike here and there. So. I'm not sure I'm a great swimmer. I can get to one end, but I'm definitely not the quickest in the pool out of the guys.
How is the body, Hodgie, compared to, say this time 6 months ago or even 12 months ago? Because there were times last year where you were looking sore. How's the body now?
I think it was more 16 where I was sore when I had the knee op and yep. had the broken arm. Last year I ended up getting through 19 games, and I think that's why I thought about keep playing because... I felt good, and the fitness guys up at Brisbane have been really good. If they sort of have a guide of how many Ks they want me to get in the legs, and whether it's speed or endurance per session, and then they'll pull me out and make sure that I'm fresh for the next session. So I think I've done all but one skill session since I've been up here, which has surprised me, and we've sort of got a bit more in than what we expected. But it's still only mid to late January, still another few months before games start, so hopefully you just keep ticking the boxes and get the K's into the legs.
And if you can keep doing that, Hodgie, there's no reason why you couldn't play for, more than 1 year and play out the two.
Mate, I'll just try and get through this pre-season first and get a kick and hopefully develop these young guys first before I worry about anything further in 2018.
Hodgie, also always so generous with your time. We appreciate you joining us on Time On. Once we let you go, and it's more of a philosophical one, and I know you won't want to talk about individual players, and we won't ask you to do that, but as someone that's been in the game for as long as you have, what do you make about not just free agency, but the constant speculation that it places on star players? We know what's going on with Rory Sloane, Tom Lynch, who you guys have the same manager, and Paul Connors is going through a similar thing, entering his final year of his contract. Is this stuff bad for the game, or is it just the way it's going?
Of course it's hard for the players. It's like any job. You've got a contract for a certain amount of time, and for some reason, we need to make up our mind 12 months before our contract's out. And so much stuff behind the scenes that people don't understand, whether it's personal and private, that people have to make a decision whether they stay at the state they're in or they change teams for a certain reason. But all people see is, oh, they want to change teams for money. And unfortunately, that's the business we're in. I don't think we should sook and whinge about it, because we have so many media people in the AFL these days that they're trying to get the scoop and the story, which I guess you got to understand it. We love the fact that AFL is the biggest game in majority of the states in Australia, and people want to talk about it. So I don't think there's any reason to whinging about it. We've just got a couple on the chin, and like most other things, if it affects you, try and ignore it and just go about your business.
Hodgie, it's been great to chat. I think everyone listening will be so pleased and happy for you, not just as Brisbane fans, but as footy fans, that you know, you've done every skill session but one, and training seems to be going great. And the decision to go up there and help out this young side is a fantastic one, and we hope it pays dividends, and we hope you have a fantastic year in 2018.
Cheers, mate.
Thanks, Hodgie. Luke Hodge, we'll speak to you soon on Time Hon. Luke Hodge, and he's always so generous with his time. Victorian Lions memberships, jump on now. This side is an exciting one. They've got a great young list. They're on sale, the memberships. Get yours at membership.lions.com.au. Speaking of a result, we have a result finally in the search for a new coach of the Socceroos. We all know what happened with Ange Postecoglou and his departure, but Bert van Marwijk, he is a world-class coach. He, of course, took the Netherlands to a World Cup final back in 2010. Since then, he's led the Saudi Arabian team to also qualify for this year's finals. He is a manager that has a lot of prestige and a lot of class that comes associated with his name. Speaking of both prestige and class, Andy Harper, Fox Sports commentator and soccer guru, joins us on the line. Hello, Andy.
Hey, Sam. Look, I think you can use one of those, but not both together.
Okay, both might be
gilding the lily a bit.
Both might be a stretch. We'll just go with class for the moment. We'll build up to prestige. Righto. Andy, you've been in this game a long, long time, and I'm not going to ask you to re-go over what happened with Ange, because we know. What's your initial reaction when you found out that it was Bert van Marwijk?
Resignation. You know, I still want FFA to go with if not locals, credentialed locals.
And why is that, Andy?
Well, because I don't know how much better Bert van Marwijk is, say, than Graham Arnold. He coached a team to a World Cup. Funnily enough, Sam, his crowning glory was also the moment for which he's been most heavily criticised. He has got a very good CV. I pay respect to Bert van Marwijk, and I will say of FFA that I can quite easily follow the logic of the appointment, right? So I don't want to can it in that sense. But my overriding view is not everyone was in this camp. I think most people were, actually, in hindsight. Liked the way Ange did what he did with the team, and they liked the team being bold. There were moments when people started getting a bit nervous, but when we look back over that journey, I think most fans of the team and most sports fans who watched the Socceroos thought, you know what, that was good. We had a red hot go, and he made a team from nothing, and they've qualified for the World Cup. Now I look at Bert van Marwijk with a very solid CV, no question. He gets to that World Cup final in 2010, and you know, that is a high point of any coach's career, lost 1-0 to Spain. But at the same moment in that game was when he was most heavily criticised from some of the greats of Dutch football, including the late Johan Cruyff, who was acerbic in his criticism at the way the team played.
Said it was anti-football.
Anti-football. I mean, it was against our football culture. It's against what we've tried to build since the 1970s over a 40, 50-year period. Holland became the Brazil of Europe based on this Ajax, Cruyff, Rinus Michels revolution, right? And the Dutch have been trading off that for decades, okay? They've made some great players, and Dutch coaches have been trading off that reputation for decades. Unfortunately, the truth of it is most of these Dutch practitioners now are Dutch by passport, but not Dutch by the way they set their football up. And this is causing a whole heap of consternation in the country, in the Netherlands itself. So forget what we think about it in Australia. But, you know, Sam, you get to the 2010 World Cup and that horrible tackle by Nigel de Jong. I can't remember who it was on, but he nearly cut one of the Spanish players in half. That's become the bookmark, right, for that Dutch campaign. And that's why Van Marwijk has been so scrutinised and so criticised in some quarters. And I think, I look at that team. That Dutch team had Robin van Persie. It had Arjen Robben. It had Wesley Sneijder, Rafael van der Vaart. many, many other top quality players. If Van Marwijk is going to go into a World Cup and play defensive with players like that, what's he going to do with our Socceroos? And I think in that sense, if he coaches to the CV that we've seen recently, then I can't see that being a progress. I'm sorry.
So, and the question there, Andy, and you were leading into it perfectly, and by the way, it's Xabi Alonso, I think, from memory, who that Nigel de Jong
tackle was
on.
Yeah, good call. Yeah, you're
in
right.
2010. What kind of game style? I think everyone that follows soccer, perhaps not as religiously as you, but people that will sit down in their homes with their family later this year, in 4 or 5 months, and watch the Socceroos, they want to know, what kind of brand are we going to be playing, and how will it be different to Ange Postecoglou's Socceroos?
Well, those same people have watched last 4 years with Ange, and then when he was at Brisbane Roar and Melbourne Victory, because that's when Ange's football has really been in the public eye, not so much in the old NSL, unfortunately, didn't have the profile.
Yep.
But from A-League on, what you saw with Ange's team was high tempo, possession-based, in the opponent's half, attacking at every possible opportunity, because that was the best form of defence, and he thought that's what the best teams do around the world, and we're going to peg ourselves against the best teams in the world, not going to accept the stereotypes that people have foisted upon us, and to which we've slavishly agreed ourselves over years, and just sit back and take what we're given. That wasn't Ange's teams, and anyone who watched the Socceroos, it didn't work every game, but we knew the team was going to go out and attack and try and represent the Australian sporting culture the way we've all grown up with it, and that is to attack opponents, right? Mm. Whatever code. And there's a lot of cross-fertilisation in the Ange Postecoglou method from Aussie Rules, Rugby League, our cricket mentality, all that he brought to the soccer team, right? What they're going to see, I'm expecting, and this is where I'm hoping I'm 100% wrong, is a foreign coach who's going to come and get very well paid. He won't know much about the place, but, you know, he can learn. How much does he really care about the legacy? Got a big question mark on that.
Yep.
How much is he going to invest in the local scene? Massive question mark on that. And his mentality is going to be to go to the next World Cup and do as well as he can, batten down the hatches, try not to lose matches so that his reputation comes through untarnished. And I'm not sure what else we can expect from him. And then where does that leave us? How much progress have we made with that approach? Mm.
And I guess, Andy, and I don't disagree with everything you're saying, would the argument against that be that Gus Hiddink did, you know, applied a similar kind of regime and tactic and had a very, very successful campaign, albeit he had a lot longer than Bert van Marwijk has now?
It's a good point. Yeah, it's a good point you make. And all I can say, this is why I think we've undersold Ange as a country.
Yep.
Just imagine Ange with a team that had Mark Viduka in it, just for a moment, right? Now, Hiddink was brilliant, and at that time, there wasn't a local candidate who could readily step into that position. It's a good discussion point. It's not a fair comparison because of the ground we've made over the last 10 years, etc., right? But the point about Hiddink, and then even when we got to that match against Italy, when he was too conservative. Easy for us to say, we weren't in the hot seat. But Italy a man down, most people watching that game were waiting for Hiddink to do something to win the match, and he was waiting and waiting and waiting. He played poker to get to injury time, to extra time, and the poker game failed. Yes, we got to the round of 16, and it was brilliant, and we've been dining out on that ever since. But I tell you what, I'll pull one player out of that team, Mark Viduka, and if he played in this campaign with Ange Postecoglou, they probably would have won the group. Right. It was the lack of goal scoring that put us through the repechage against Syria and Honduras, not because the formations or the style of play. They just couldn't convert their chances. And so if Ange, it's no point me hiding my admiration for what he does in a dressing room with players, but if he had the Dutch team of Robin van Persie, Rafael van der Vaart, Wesley Sneijder, Huntelaar, all these other guys in 2010... that team would have gone out against Spain, and short of saying they would have won it, they would have had a real go at them. And if you lose the match, you're still true to what your culture has been over the last 50 years. According to the late Johan Cruyff, Bert van Marwijk just piddled all over that football history, and they lost the match anyway.
Mm. Yeah, it's a fascinating point. Andy, your passion is unquestionable, and your knowledge as a commentator in this country is second to none. We appreciate your time so much here on Time On, and look... I think you said you hope you're wrong. I hope you're wrong, and a lot of us probably hope that as well. But, you know, the proof will be in the pudding in 5, 6, 7 months' time. I appreciate your time, and we look forward to speaking to you soon.
No problem, Sam. Look, the comments will be made, analysis will be made, but overridingly, we'll comment on the team, but we'll certainly support the team. I understand the logic behind the decision, etc., and we hope they go well.
Good on you, Andy. Andy Harper there, Fox Sports commentator.
Will Rory be a distraction, do you think?
No.
What makes you so confident that it won't be a distraction?
Oh, look, I know the quality of the bloke. That's why I'm very confident.
So the playing group, would they be able to handle, I suppose, preparing?
Yeah, it's going to be similar, I imagine, until Rory signs, that there'll be this interest, but our guys have gone through this a few times now. And I think, knowing Rory, that he'll avoid any unwanted attention on himself. That's not his personality, and so, yeah, we'll deal with that.
I can't sit here and say, is he going to stay, is he going to go, what's the probability of him staying? All I can say is we're going to be doing our best, putting our best foot forward to give him the opportunity to sign with us. And look, I've seen no reason to suggest he won't, but, you know, he's got a year to run on his contract, and, you know, we started those discussions, and hopefully, you know, those discussions wrap up pretty quickly.
Welcome back to Time On, 12 minutes to 7. The first voice you heard there was that of Don Pike, the Adelaide coach, who held a press conference today, and then Rob Chapman on Afternoons with our own Andy Marr, talking about Rory Sloane. Well, whether we like it or not, it is going to be a weekly headline, Rory Sloane's future at the Adelaide Crows. Has your point of view changed? Do you think Rory Sloane needs to come out and say something? Does he avoid all questions as long as he can for the rest of the year? 9429 1116 0433 98 1116. We're going to turn our attention back to soccer and the Melbourne Victory. The big team in this town take on Sydney FC tomorrow night at Amy Park in the Big Blue. The Australia Day fixture, of course, becoming somewhat of an annual event. And their coach has been good enough to join us, a man who is a very good friend to those at SEN, but for the first time on Time On. Hello, Kevin Musket.
How are you?
Very, very well, Muskie. Very well. Before we get into the victory, and you guys have really got your groove back to fourth on the ladder, reaction from you, Muskie, on our new appointment as senior Socceroos coach?
Look, pleased first and foremost that someone has been appointed, and the fact that it's Bird, I think, is record speaks for itself. You know, he's had you know, some experience in an actual World Cup, and you know, most recently from our perspective, you know, competing against you know, Saudi Arabia. We've seen, you know, what work he's done with them, and you know, Saudi Arabia qualified under him automatically, and obviously we went through by the playoffs. So you know, the positives from that perspective, not only his experience, but he'll know or have some first hand knowledge on our team and you know, our current group, if you like, and I think that's a head start, certainly for anyone taking over.
What about your team, Muskie? A turnaround of form of sorts, you know, 3-0 last week over the Wanderers, the big game on Friday. What's been the difference the last couple of weeks?
Yeah, I don't know about the difference. You know, we've been applying ourselves, and I think the group of you know, steadily over a period of time, you know, progressed in their attitudes, been, you know, superb, and I think the mindset of the group is in a good place at the moment. And as I said, you know, progressing from that mental perspective has helped us enormously, and that's all great. But the only important thing at the moment is you know, the here and now, and that's tomorrow night.
And how is it going to play out tomorrow night? This rivalry with Sydney is as fierce as it's always been, and they're flying as a team as well.
Yeah, and you know, our focus has been you know, clearly, like I said, on based on what's important, and you know, we've identified areas that you know, we think is very important, and you know, we've focused on that, and owned it ourselves. If I'm honest, you know, a lot of the work, if not all of it, has been on ourselves and preparing to perform to a certain standard tomorrow night.
Muskie, can we just address the Mark Milligan situation for a moment? Because there was some reporting and some talk around about him potentially leaving the club this year, and the club actually moved to sort of address it and say that it wasn't happening. How did that all play out?
Well, exactly that. As you've mentioned, you know, we've released a statement from our perspective as a football club, and you know, we've adhered to certain standards. And at this point in time, the reality is also that what's important is the group and the team. So, you know, the Milligan situation at the moment is no different to most players around the country, or a lot of players, sorry, around the country during this window. This one's played out a little bit in the public, which is disappointing, but there's, you know, certain factors that have contributed to that. But like I said, you know, we've been focusing this week on the team, and therefore what's important is tomorrow night and the performance, so it doesn't enter the conversation.
Yep, okay. The rivalry with Sydney, just back on that, is it a bigger rivalry perhaps than even the Melbourne Derby is these days?
Yeah, well, and then at the moment it is, because it's the only thing that's important. It's the next game. And then when when we get involved in the last derby, that'll be the most important derby, because it's cross-town rivals. So, you know, we'll cross that bridge where it comes to. But you're right, for me, there's only one thing that's important, and that's tomorrow night's game, and that's where all our focus is.
Yeah, it's a massive game, no doubt about that. Yeah. Hey, Muskies, we let you go. I just wanted to get your thoughts on the VAR, because it's obviously been a big part of this season.
It's not important, mate.
But it is important, yeah. Muskie, because it's become such an integral part of the game.
Yeah, it is. And I think, you know, we've seen in recent weeks that it, you know, that what we didn't give a chance to do was for everyone to get on the same page with,
yep.
You know, as a pilot in terms of a competition in testing it, and you know, that's exactly what tests do. They unearth teething problems, and you know, allow everyone to get used to it. And I think we're at a point now where, you know, everyone's got a relatively clear understanding of what it's going to be used for, and I think it's been used a lot better. But to disappoint you, it's not really important, mate. Tomorrow night and how we perform is the only thing that's important.
Well, let's finish on that note, Muskie. It's a massive game. Victory against Sydney FC. Make sure you get there. 7:50 yeah. kickoff at Amy Park. Still tickets on sale. Yeah. It's going to be a massive night, and we hope very much for a Melbourne victory win. Kevin Muskett, appreciate your time. Good luck tomorrow night.
No problem. Thanks very much.
Kevin Muskett there, the coach of Melbourne Victory, the ever-honest Kevin Muskett, and he's right. They need to keep winning, back up to fourth on the ladder of the Melbourne Victory, but they need to continue that good form. Make sure you get there. 7:50 kickoff tomorrow night.
It definitely was very tough. I'm shaking now, so I'm really emotional, because I could win this match. Before the match, I knew that it's going to be very tough, and I saw that she's a very tough opponent. She's moving pretty well, and she's hitting from everywhere. So, yeah, I'm really glad that I could resist and I could win this match.
Coming up to the 7 o'clock news on Time On, Sam McClure with you. Simona Halep there defeating Angelique Kerber 6-3, 4-6, 9-7 in an epic. She goes into the final take on Caroline Wozniacki, who defeated Merton 6-3, 7-6 a little earlier. Red Time headlines, Glenn Maxwell back in Australia's one-day squad ahead of tomorrow's fourth one-dayer against England. That's in Adelaide. He replaces the injured Aaron Finch. Just one off the SMS quickly. G'day, Sam. How come the new Socceroos coach isn't still coaching Saudi Arabia if he got them through to the World Cup? Mozza, fairly good question. I think he didn't want changes to his coaching staff. I also think he didn't want to be based in Saudi Arabia in the months leading up to Russia. So they parted ways. Hey, City versus Newcastle coming up shortly. Three changes to the 11 from City's last match. Muscat, Delbridge and Mork in for Fitzgerald, Schenkeveld, and Atkinson. That match live on 11:16 SEN from 7:30 on Football Nation. Jack Heverin up next. I'll see you tomorrow.